This is Gary Wakefield, and you're listening to Queer Life Stories.
Sarah Gulpin, and I'm 55 and lesbian. Born in New Zealand, in the North Island, but I was adopted out as a baby and came to live in South Australia when I was about four, and grew up mainly in the hills. So I suppose in lots of ways that's quite isolated there in those days. You know, you had a bike and it was as far as you could ride and get back. I've got a brother, he's 3 years older than me, also adopted, and we were pretty tight growing up. We're not tight anymore, not because of my sexuality, just because he's a tosser. We were mum, dad, two children, boy, girl, and because they got to choose, so that was easy for them to do that. Mum's a 10-pound pom, my adoptive mother, and she came out on a boat when she was 21. Later met my father in Townsville. He was DJing at the time, or what was, you know, radio announcers, but you know, that's, he did the night show. They married, and for work purposes he ended up, he got a job with British Paints. They went to Melbourne, and then he got a job with British Paints, and he took British Paints over to New Zealand. Hadn't been able to have children, and then so they adopted my brother and myself when they were there. And so mum's got a sister who lives in Perth, so we didn't see them very often. Dad's got a brother in Melbourne and another one in New South Wales who I don't ever remember meeting. No family to speak of. I think my uncle and his wife came a couple of times over the years. They had a caravan and travelled around Australia and did lots of things like that. So yes, meeting them, but other than that, it was very much just the four of us. And even now, when push comes to shove, you know, my father's since passed away, but mum reverts very much back to my brother and myself. I was academically inclined, and I loved sport, and I liked people. I was probably a bit of a, you know, would have been classified as a bully in primary school, but I had a breakaway life change in high school, and I just really liked it. I suppose the group of people that I hung around with, we were very similar. We both tried to, you know, high achievement in school results, and nothing wrong with a bit of competition. So I did horse riding and played tennis and soccer and loved it all.
So through high school, were you questioning your sexuality then?
No idea. But we did have, you know, I suppose there were clues. I had, had friends and we'd call each other woman and we loved each other, and it wasn't sexual at all. I had no idea about any of that. I was, you know, quite naive in a whole range of things. But liked being with them, you know, and we were pretty close and looked out for each other. And probably more my mum's friends, who, you know, like I would have been in my mid-teens and they're in their 30s, so and I started looking at them differently, not so much people my own age. Would have been on my 18th birthday that I first kissed a girl, next to the fellow that I was dating. So that was a bit awkward for everyone. Well, not me, but him. And the weeks that followed until we broke up was awkward. So, she said, I haven't given you a birthday kiss. So it started as a kiss on the cheek, and the next thing you know, it's on the mouth, and away we went.
That was it.
Done. And that was it. Yeah, no looking back. Absolutely no looking back.
Do you remember hearing about lesbians or gay people or anything growing up?
I didn't even know I was a lesbian until I was in my mid-30s. You know, someone said something about, you know, are you a lesbian? And I went, I suppose I am.
Did you know what it was? Was it like a... Do you remember hearing about like a community of gay people?
Nothing. You know, no, quite... Yeah, no, nothing. Yeah. 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 No. Adelaide, no internet. It's so different. I had no idea. I didn't know any other gay people, but this girl, and we ended up in a relationship. I shared with a couple of other girls' sisters, who basically said I had to go and see a psychiatrist, and you know, because that's not okay. And all that really did was push me out of the house, and I ended up living with this lady for a year and a half. Sadness ensued, you know, and the rest is sort of history. But it was, yeah, there was nowhere to go, nowhere to find, well, not for me anyway. I ended up in Canberra for a year, even less places that I could find there, and came back. Places like the Stag, which was a hotel someone told me about, so I went there on a Thursday, and the Golden Club dancers probably started around about when I was 21, and they were big, but I didn't know when they were on and or how to find out. So finding out about where to go, where to meet people, was pretty non-existent. And I think it's probably still hard for some people who feel in the country or, you know, regional areas. I didn't know any other gay people, but clearly, you know, but we'd hold hands under the table and things like that, and there would, you know, people would obviously see, you know, at different times, and you know, fellas would give you a hard time, different places, different degrees of hard time, but no real difficulties other than my flatmates, yeah, that you know, thought that I needed to have psychiatric help.
Family?
Oh no, yeah, that wasn't good. My dad doesn't really talk about things. He's a bit of a, you know, something happens and he would come in with a random sort of just passing by, how are you doing sort of thing, not front on an issue. When I was still living with the housemates, I had they gave me such a hard time. Anyway, I took a whole lot of tablets, which turned out to be Panadol and were not threatening in any way. But you know, ended up in hospital with my stomach pumped, and that was pretty sad. Resulting in mum and dad talking, because you know, it was an emergency. My mother offered to send me to Switzerland. I wish I'd gone. You know, all those blonde Swedish women, but I hadn't worked it out then, you see. Didn't know there was all these options out there. So, but yeah, it just wasn't really, talked about. And it wasn't that I couldn't talk about it, but my mum wouldn't have wanted to talk about it, and dad just didn't talk about things like that, you know.
But they knew.
Suppose, I don't know. I just didn't. With my mum, she was alluding to, you know, we've had this up and down relationship, and we get along just fine in the past, as long as I wasn't in a relationship. And then if I was in a relationship, then then that cuts out that part of your world. So it's not that I couldn't talk about it, but if you did say something, then you know, it was, I don't know, it would become a negative thing rather than a positive thing. And so
it's a difficult way to have a relationship with you.
Yeah, well, when Sue and I met, I was coming up to must have been 39, was I? Coming up to being 40. And Sue had met my mum once or twice, and we went out to lunch at Marion, and sat down to have lunch, and you know, mum started on, and she liked Sue. She, you know, she probably the first girlfriend I had that she really liked. And it's probably good reasons for it too. That, and then she starts on the, you know, back in my day, you know, happened, and it took me a minute to work out what she was talking about. Of course, she was talking about, you know, gay people and me in particular, and you know, but you know, just people knew, but you didn't see anything. And she thought that that would be much better. And I just went from zero to 1,000, and it was like, you know, 40 years of, you know, pretending that my world doesn't exist. That, and I went, not doing it. And I was like, you know, what? And all the children should go back in the coal mines. Like, you know, what's wrong with you? And, you know, I basically told her to F off, and I said, you know, we're going, and Sue wants to carry a bag. And I said, no, she to carry her own freaking bag. You know. And so I didn't see her for
3 years.
2 years, I reckon. It was like, if I can't have a relationship with you for the whole of me, then I'm prepared not to have a relationship at all. And it wasn't until my auntie in England passed away, and Mum got a message to my son, and I rang her and spoke to her, and it's sort of, we've sort of picked off from there, and it's, you know, we don't want to talk about that bad time, but she doesn't want to, but she has become far less judgmental, and she knows that, that, you know, it's just not going to change. And as I said, it helps that she really loves Sue, so it makes a big difference. Every unhappy moment in my childhood growing up enabled me to escape into my real parents. I also tried, you know, flashlights to the sky, SOSing to anyone that was out there to come and save me from where I was. And it's not that I had a bad childhood, I certainly didn't, but I wasn't a happy kid. And I knew that my mother loved me. I don't think she liked me very much. She thought I was clever, she thought I could be funny, but, and we could be close, it just was sporadic. Anyway, I digress. So when I was about 15, I left home. 16, must have been 16. I counted down the days to my 16th birthday, where she couldn't make me come back. And I sent off a letter to social services, or the equivalent in New Zealand, to get a copy of my birth certificate. And over there, they issue you with two birth certificates. One is the one that you're born with your mother and or father's name on it, your birth parents. And then when you're adopted out, you are issued with a second birth certificate, and that's got your new parents and your new name on there. And so in getting my birth certificate, that gave me the name of my birth mother. And it wasn't until, and I didn't really know what to do with it, how to go about it, and I'm like, oh, you know, do you get a private investigator? Like, I had no concept about how to do that. And it was something that was there, but, you know, not, wasn't like, it wasn't the, wasn't a big burn like I had to, but I wanted to. I wanted to be able to say I'm okay, that I didn't want her to feel bad, you know. If nothing else, I just wanted, you know, her to know that I was okay and that I wasn't cross. Anyway, it wasn't until my brother got married, and he's adopted as well, and he, as it turns out, has a full-blooded brother who's 7 days younger than I am, or 7 days older than I am. And so that's a little bit unfortunate, because when my parents were looking for another little person, they did ask, was there any possibility that there was, you know, a relation, you know, from, and they said no. I obviously didn't look, because I don't know, I assume it was the same hospital. They only had, it wasn't like there were masses of adoption places in New Zealand at the time. And he's, yeah, I'm born at the end of July, he's like the 7th of August or something like that. And he found Kim, my brother, and he'd been searching for him and managed to track down our father, and then so on. And they're like, you know, they might as well been similar interests, similar occupations. They look similar, stand similar. My brother's a bit foot shorter. I don't know why, what happened there, but, you know. But other than that, they're very similar, like-minded sort of people. And when he got married, Mike came over for the wedding, and in discussion with him and his girlfriend at the time. Well, they asked if I'd, you know, had tried to find us, or it's best, and I said, oh, send it to us. And so I did, and I don't know, 3 days later, they, you know, they'd gone to the library, looked it up, they've got this amazing system over there about finding things, and he said, got a number, do you want it? And I said, sure. So, I get teary even just now. So, I rang, and she thought I was a debt collector. It's a bit unfortunate, but... Stick like on the phone. And she and I are so similar, it's ridiculous.
I'll second that.
Yeah, we're both a little bit crazy naughty. And a little bit naughty. I think all Kiwis are a little bit naughty.
They've both got a big naughty gene.
Yes, we have a big naughty gene, that's for sure. Yeah. She had a money making scheme one time, and so she decided to grow dope because she wanted to come to Australia to visit me. She didn't have any money, so yeah. Anyway, that's another story. But yes, big naughty Jean. Yeah, so I didn't hide necessarily. I didn't talk to her about the process to my adoptive mother, but I told her about it, and just gently, just slip it in. It turned out, of course, she went on to have three other children. One of them since passed away, and he was gay as well, Stephen. He was so there was myself and then Graham. He lives in Queensland now, and Stephen passed away just before I met him. But he was and they all knew about me. Like, she didn't make a secret about it. It was somewhere out there, you've got a sister. And then the youngest one, Glenn. And so anyway, Glenn came to Australia and stayed with us for a while and became a part of my world, and he's since gone back to New Zealand and always travelled other places as well. But yeah.
Do you keep in touch? You got a relationship with them?
Well, yes and no, not really, not anymore. I've been over there a couple of times. Mum's since passed away 3 years ago maybe. But the time before that I saw them, I think, having gone to the funeral, I think there were relationship problems between her and her husband that interfered. But when I first met her, and you know, she was like, part of this is yours, and I'm like, really not interested. It's not about getting money or whatever. It was really about, you know, finding you, and you know, and so I've done that. And then the second time I went back, she was a bit funny about, you know, it'd all go to Glenn, really. And I was like, okay, I'm cool with that. But she passed away from lung cancer, and I had no idea. With hindsight, I'd rung a few times, and you know, she was being busy, or she was waiting for Glenn to, you know, and she just didn't want to be on the phone, and so I'd sort of got, you know, basically got the shits and been like, oh, whatever. And so it had been quite a while, I think, before, since I'd spoken to her, and then Glenn rang and said, Mum's passed away. So that was, I was cross. It's like, well, you could have told me. It wasn't an overnight accident type thing. So I think that you would say that we were close for a time, but I think that some family politicking got in the middle of that, and so not as close, but you know, it was so nice to know that she was there, and it was nice to have been able to put some other pieces together.
My name is Sue Galpin, and I'm just a few months off 60, and I'm a lesbian. I've had many.
Hang on, that means I'm not 55 yet. I'm only 54. I'd like to revise. Yes. I'm only 54. I never have any idea.
That's right.
That's
right.
Noted.
Okay, noted.
Noted for the record. I grew up in Melbourne, one of four children. I've got three brothers, but quite a small family, a bit of a nuclear family. We had a nan and a pop and a grandma and a grandpa, but that's pretty much as far as the family extended. And my parents weren't overly social outside of the family, but I don't think we realised as kids, because we had a pretty good upbringing, and my parents worked really, really hard. They were self-employed, and they believed work hard and, you know, earn what you want in life and then enjoy it together. And that's exactly what we did. So we spent holidays together and what have you. They sent us to private schools. We got good educations. And then when I was 16, I left Melbourne and went to New South Wales, to Lismore, where Mum needed to move because she has a condition called Raynaud's, which affects your circulation in your fingers. And she had to go to a warmer climate for her health. And so the family moved, and I spent my last 2 years of high school in New South Wales. I wasn't overly fond of that idea, but I saw the practical side of it. I finished high school and became an electronics technician. I became the first female electronics technician in Australia. It was a bit of a challenge. I like a challenge.
She was on a bus.
Really?
She was on the Mike Wolf show.
Why?
Brag.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's not my thing. But it was a good challenge, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I spent 12 years in that industry and met some wonderful, wonderful people, and young and old. And they took the time to teach me the skills that they spent years developing. And so I grew up in a workplace that was 150 men and me. So that was how big our workshop was. And I found that they treated me with respect. If I treated them with respect, they treated me with respect. I had boyfriends and what have you. Had no sort of idea about the gay community particularly. Was quite happy, you know, married, had 3 children. Went on when my youngest child went to school. I went back. I had a few years off. When I had my first child, I stopped working, and then I ran a business from home because I'm a bit mad. And then I got a stepson as part of that process. So I went from one child to 2 children, and within a couple of weeks I went to 3 children because I had my second child. And suddenly the house was very full, and I had a business that I was running from home, and I had 8 women subcontracting to me. And it was just crazy, and it was good, it was full on, it was lovely. Had a husband who was away a lot of the time. It turned out he was playing up all of that time and had been playing up all of our married life, which was really sad and unfortunate. But I went on to have my last child, and when she was 5 and settled in school, I went back to university and I became a molecular biologist. In science, which I loved, and then I did that for a few more years, and towards the middle of that degree my husband and I separated. We went through some pretty difficult times. He took on some pretty bad behaviours in terms of a bit deviant, and there was a lot of deception and a lot of lying, and he was trying out all sorts of different sexual preferences and what have you, but he was hiding all of that, and so it was a bit sad. He was supposed to be going to counselling, and he had great stories about how he was going to counselling and what the outcomes were and what the therapies were, and he wasn't actually attending at all. So that was pretty, pretty sad for a couple of years. I was a mum with 3 children, studying at university, working at Bunnings at the time, to have an income. And it was during that time I'd been separated for 2 years, and I met Sarah. And when I'd separated from Peter, and I'd decided that, you know, I wasn't ready for another relationship, but when I was ready for a relationship, I'd had a really amazing life so far, and I decided I wanted to spend the second half of my life with a woman. And so I started experimenting a little bit just on the internet and, you know, what have you. And I went, I'm not quite ready for that yet. I don't know. And I wasn't looking for anything at all at that time. And I happened to come across Sarah at Bunnings, who was putting lights in her garden. And so we got chatting and what have you. And Sarah invited me over for dinner. And I came over, and we just clicked right from the very get-go. And pretty much the rest is history. We moved in fairly soon together. That opened up a whole other tin of worms, because the children weren't quite ready for a lesbian mother. And so their worlds were turned on their ear, literally. And as a result, some of them moved out to spend time with Dad because they weren't ready for it and they didn't want it. And over the time, over the years, they've come around full circle, and they're all pretty good now. But we've gone through some hard times to get to that point. But we're pretty strong in our beliefs and pretty supportive of each other. So, and many, many, many people who knew them said, just wait, they'll come back. You know, they're good kids, they'll come back. And they did. And in terms of in work, I used to work at Bunnings, and Sarah would come in, pop in for lunch and what have you. And I would just introduce people to Sarah. And then we had a night at the pub. We all went out together. And so I said, right, here we go. And we were out in that minute. It was like, oh, I didn't know. Oh, I had no idea. So I used to run the electrical section, and I was older, and I had lots of younger people working around me either side in the store and what have you. And it's a bit like overnight, you know, it's a bit like you become an icon. Oh my God, oh my God. It's like, I've got a gay mum now. Oh, isn't that wonderful? It's like, God, you're all dags, you know, the lot of you. So not matter of fact, but just pretty open. And we're both like that. We're pretty much, we don't hide things. We walk down the street together, hand in hand from day one. We've been married now since 2007, so we're pretty lucky. Coming up for 13 years, 12 years. I've been together for 16 years, and 16 wonderful years. It's been great.
We once got asked not to cuddle so closely in a cafe when we were first together.
We didn't go back there again.
Sue was quite cross about it. Mm. We'd been going there for a long time.
I can get a bit funny. I'm not snooty normally. I'm really pretty relaxed and, you know, pretty chill most of the time.
We were very in love and very over each, you know, all over each other. So, you know, with hindsight.
And I was a bit sensitive when we were first going out together. And I'd go, did you see how that person looked at us? And Sue would say, no, they're looking at us. Yes, didn't you see how they're looking at us?
She'd
go,
Don't take any notice.
They won't meet. Like, I'd look at them and they'd look away. I'd say, that's not right, because I'd never experienced this before. And so it's an interesting thing that being part of a gay couple is that I learnt to walk down the street and not actually look people in the eye. Whereas I would, you know, I check everyone out as I go on. Oh, that's an interesting person, you know. Oh, I wonder what they're doing. I wonder what, you know, their background is or whatever. But I found that people tend to walk towards you and look a little bit away because they're a bit embarrassed. But we've never hidden our relationship ever. And not to our children, not to our friends, and certainly not to our family. And that's certainly been to our detriment at times. Oh, my parents were good when we very first met them. The very, very, very first time, we'd only been together a couple of weeks, week and a half.
It wasn't
weeks.
Even that. You'd come over for dinner, and you explained to me how you were very busy, and you wouldn't be able to see me for the next couple of weeks because she was going to Queensland for Christmas and the Nationals.
National titles, and so I was going to support him, and Sarah said, "Oh, that's far too long. What if I came with you?" And so my parents live up that way.
So it was a week from dinner that I met her parents.
So we met, you know, this is Sarah, we're going out together. And I don't know whether the penny just didn't quite drop or not, but, oh, hello, you know, it's nice and what have you. And then Mum and I don't speak as comfortably on the phone as I'd like. You know, it's not quite as relaxed as I'd like. Whereas Sarah and Mum on the phone are like the greatest of buddies.
It's like, Mum would ring me and I'll be on the phone
on the phone, and Sarah's
2 hours.
On the phone for an hour and a half. I'm saying, I've been trying to call you. I've been chatting to your mum. Yeah. Oh, Lord. And so I actually was very comfortable that Mum and Sarah had a really good relationship. And I was really pleased about that, because certainly Mum and I, whilst as a child we didn't have a difficult relationship, we didn't have a very cuddly relationship or you know, personal relationship, I guess, in some ways. And so I was really pleased that Sarah and Mum did have that, because I think it was really good for both of them, to be honest. And then for my birthday, it all fell apart a few years later when I hadn't seen my parents for a little while, and as a beautiful treat, my birthday falls just near Mother's Day, Sarah organised a surprise that we would fly up and see Mum and Dad. And we'd booked out the local restaurant and we organised for all of my brothers and their children and everyone to meet, because we're spread out all over the place, and to meet for Mother's Day for Mum for a surprise. And we arrived the day before, and I said to Sarah, we better let Mum and Dad know we're here, because country town. And I said, they'll be really miffed if they discover that we're actually in town and we haven't been to see them, or let them know that we're here even. So I rang them and I said, look, we come up, we're in town. And Dad knew what was happening. He was in on the secret so that it could all be organised. And I said, we're in town, and as you know, we'd pop up and have a coffee with Mum. And to my absolute amazement, Dad said, don't think that's a good idea. So we'd flown from Adelaide to almost the Queensland border, and Dad said, don't think that's a good idea. And I said, oh, are you going out? Because I was quite stupid, you see. And I said, are you going out? Are you doing something? And he said, no. And his voice was really strained and unusual. And I said, is everything all right, Dad? And he said, not really. And I said, what's going on? And he said, well, your mum's not really okay with you and Sarah. So, as it turned out, to be a gay couple in Adelaide when your parents live in Lismore was okay, but to be a gay couple in the backyard at Lismore was not okay. So basically it came to a head when Dad said, your mum said that if you come up while she's here, she'll leave the house before you get here and she won't return until you're both gone. And I was just gobsmacked, you know, I was really surprised. And so I went, oh God. I didn't quite know what to do with that. I really didn't. I was an adult, you know. If I was 16, I might have gone, oh God, you know, my parents want to disown me. But as an adult, I was like, I was pretty confident in, you know, I'd had pretty good careers. I'd raised great children. I'd been able to do what I wanted, when I wanted, and excel in all my fields. And suddenly I had these parents going, we don't want you. You know, we don't want to see you. And I went, far out. Anyway, I was really upset. And my brothers, God love them, all said, God, oh, we had no idea. Oh my God, come to me. Come to our place. Come to our place, you know. Oh, have dinner with us. Come stay with us. And they were just horrified, absolutely horrified. And they've always been really good. So the boys have been good.
Mm.
Sarah hadn't met Greg, and I said, she said, do you want to go home? And I said, no, I want you to meet Greg. So we did. So that was a bit of an interesting, unexpected turn, and so whilst
I don't talk to her mum anymore.
No, they don't chat now. And whilst the bridge has been mended, and we do have conversations on the phone, I haven't seen my parents since.
Mm. How long ago was that?
2007. It's a long time.
It's a long time, and I don't think I've spoken to her mum since. So. Yeah, Sue was pretty cross with her mum, but I was really cross with her dad. Like, I was actually, I still am, crosser at her father, because he knew.
He knew.
And at any point he could have said, well, maybe don't come up. Like, it just never even needed to happen. Like,
I think he thought if he held off long enough that mum would come around, or it wouldn't be an issue or whatever. And of course, you know, mum was never going to change her mind. And so it was an issue. And we just walked smack bang into the middle of it and didn't see it coming. So, you know, Dad was pretty devastated. He didn't quite know what to do. He had torn loyalties and what have you. But, you know, they're not bad parents and they're not bad people. But, you know, Mum has strong beliefs and she wasn't prepared to compromise those beliefs even for family. Yeah, it is hard. It's hard. But, you know, you have to move on and you have to live your life and you have to be, I believe, you have to be true to who you are. And so so we've, you know, we've walked the walk and talked the talk, and we've been lucky enough to create businesses in which we can work and support other people who, you know, many have difficult situations with family, with friends, with work, because of their sexuality choices.
I don't think we've ever been discriminated against because of our relationship. not openly.
We're a bit in our own world at times, and yeah. we might well have been, and not even know.
Well, that's, there is that. just oblivious to other people.
We one of the reasons we left the venue at Theberton was because the neighbours who were the building we had was a Greek community centre, and there's a Greek church across the road, and we actually did business with the Greek church from time to time for catering and things, events and wakes and all sorts of things. But we didn't have a Greek contingent necessarily in our street. But we had a lot of neighbours who didn't want the status quo to change in any way, shape or form. And they certainly didn't want a lesbian establishment with a gay clientele, and I use that word very broadly, an LGBTIQ clientele, frequently coming. And so they used many, many measures to actually bring the closure of that business around. They tried everything that they could possibly think of without saying, we don't want the gays in our street. Mm. And so they ended up having the building closed on a technicality. But the reality is that, sadly, we believe, and many, many people believe, that there was a very anti-gay sentiment in the street. And so it was unfortunate, because we're actually about building community, and we don't really care what the community is. We want the community to be strong, and we want the community to be a good balanced mix. And so wherever we are, we think it's important that we integrate with whoever is our local community, and that was the residential area in Theberton. And so we did lots of things to try to promote those interactions between us and the neighbours, but the neighbours just did not want it to go the other way. And so, yeah, so whilst the building was closed on a fire technicality, I think there was discrimination there. And I'm quite confident quietly that's, although no one would say it for political reasons, because they'd be persecuted in a business sense, I'm sure that's what it was.
I suppose sometimes, depending on where we've been, we've been cautious at different times, maybe earlier on, where we've said that we've referred to each other as as a business partner rather than a spouse. I can't think in what circumstances that was though, but not really, no, I don't think so.
No,
sometimes we've just been cautious not to, and it's not that we have a problem with it, but sometimes you just don't need to shove it down someone's throat either. So it shouldn't matter. Well, one of the things about one of the last Girl Fridays that we had when we were at Theberton was we had a mix of straight and gay people that would come, and interesting, it was one of the straight ladies that said something about, said that she wasn't gay, and it's like, oh. And someone said, one of the other ladies said, oh, I have no idea who he is, because it wasn't about that. Like, Girl Friday is, whilst most people, most of the women probably do identify as lesbian or bisexual or transgender, it's not what it's about. It's about being with other women, because women interact differently, there's always a chance that you could pick up a cute cheeky babe, so there's always hope.
I don't think we hesitate in many things because of our sexuality, and certainly I don't really think it's held us back, but I think Sarah's right. I think we tend to read different business. We've been in business since we've been together. We come from quite different backgrounds. Sarah was a paralegal when we met. I was a molecular biologist when we met, and we wanted to work together, and there's no commonality there really. So we decided to start all over again, and we did, and we became postal parcel couriers for a year and a day. Decided we were far too old and far too tired.
It was hard work.
And we did 8 suburbs. It was far too much. And we decided this was not a way to make an ongoing living. And we then created businesses around what we really wanted to do. And we created first Grog on Wheels, then Barbecue on Wheels, and then On Wheels events. and then we wanted to branch out into the community, and so then we started the Girls Place, and now we've come over to Diversity, and so we've worked together basically every day since we met, and so that's a bit unusual, and we have little disagreements, but most of the time we see similarly, and when we don't, Sarah tells me I'm wrong, so so we, you know, we work that out, but we tend to read the business environment, and we maybe, well, not maybe, we do refer to each other based on our perception of how we think that would best be talked about in that environment. We certainly don't hide things, and everywhere we've worked, we've been very clear with people that we are a couple right from the get-go. And when we employ staff and we have interviews, we're really clear with people that we are a couple and this is our business. And if that's an issue for people, it's important to know right at the start.
And certainly coming here, we've actually, you know, gone full tilt the other way. It's like, you know, it's like, this is, you know, directed towards the LGBTIQ community.
Diversity is a venue where people can come together, particularly people from the LGBTIQ plus community, in a safe space, in a way that they can be themselves and express themselves. They can meet like-minded people, and they can have a good time, relax, enjoy a meal, play pool, play games, come to a dance, come to a dinner, and enjoy a whole breadth of different experiences. And you know, to that end, we have a concert pianist and concert violinist playing on Valentine's Eve here, which is really quite different. It's a beautiful, romantic concert, but not what you'd expect from most LGBTIQ venues. One of the things that we're in the process of doing is we have a lovely lady by the name of Monica McCormack, who's coordinating a team. She's retired recently, and she's coordinating a team because we want to get together an LGBTIQ library, which has been missing in Adelaide for a little while, and we've had some wonderful people donate books to us. Samesh has donated a lot of their books from the Men's Health Group. Befriend wants to donate a lot of their books to us, and we've got some private collectors who are donating some what do you say, collections, so a series of books and things, so that the whole public can actually come in, borrow books, have a coffee, catch up with people, and enjoy that literature, and it's not tucked away in a cupboard somewhere and gathering dust.
Or in a garage. Yeah, some of them, some of these are, you know, these collections of books that were intended to be, but, you know, space issues more than anything, and when people heard that, you know, that's what we wanted to do, it's like, oh, I've got some, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got 100 or so books I'd like to donate. So,
and we've had individuals, you know, someone bought in 3 books
at the moment, and that will grow. But part of it is about creating social experiences that bring people together, and not only from the gay community, but from the wider community. And during that process, to actually bring down some of those barriers that exist between the two communities. And we've certainly seen that. We've been a feast hub once. We were actually asked to be a feast hub a second time, and we had to give away our events because the venue closed, but we've been asked to be a feast hub again for next year. We've been a fringe hub last year, and again, we were just didn't have this venue when the fringe registrations were on, but we'll be doing shows during fringe, and we'll actually be a fringe hub again next year. So that brings a huge variety of people in. We're doing things like, we've got some amazing people putting together a queer variety show for the bushfire victims on the Australia Day long weekend on the 25th of Jan. So, and that money will all be donated to bushfire victims. So the community is rallying, and they've been very, very keen to have a space like this. They've held on while we've found another appropriate location, and having a central location in the city is fantastic. It's ideal. It gives a whole lot more access to people. There's public transport that's free, there's nearby parking, there's buses, there's a walk to the station. So it means that we can be accessible to a whole range of people. We've got wheelchair access now that we didn't have before. And, you know, we provide all of our own meals, we cook a lot of our own food, and, you know, there's a bar. So it means that people can come and drop in and just have lunch at the cafe, or they can come to events and things and meet up with
us. And we've got regular events. We've started doing Inside Out, which is open to the the wider LGBTIQ community.
That's actually got a lower age entry point. So that's a 15 plus entry point, because there's a lot of the queer youth community who, they're a bit lost, they're in a hole, they don't have a social space. Margie Fisher does a fantastic job of running the Queer Youth Drop-In Centre, and that's on the second and fourth Thursdays of each month. But apart from that, there's not lots of other spaces that address that younger crowd. And so part of Inside Out was designed, and we had the first one last week, and that was created specifically to basically broaden. We had lots of men, we had some of our trans women were coming, but we had some trans men who also wanted to be able to come to our Girl Friday type event. And so we said, well, let's create a wider LGBTIQ event. And so Inside Out is that event.
So that's every Thursday. And when, a bit like, and Girl Friday's on Friday, same sort of thing. Just women only, or, you know, you need to identify as a woman. So whether you're transgender or and in that process, or wherever you are.
Wherever in that spectrum.
And we're looking at doing some family type things, so parents and children, blue light disco type things, and we've had
and you're three gen, so bringing bringing children and parents of gay couples into a space where they can meet up with their peers. So, you know, it's one thing to be a gay couple, it's another thing to be children of a gay couple. And who do you talk to? You know, how do you find out? Like, how do you, you know, have a chat with some, how did you get through this? What did you do? You know, was it hard? Was it all right? You know, what do you do? Or to be a parent, you know, of a gay couple. So to come into a space where parents can, we do a show sometimes called Tea and Scones with Mavis, and Louise Lawson is an amazing entertainer, and she created her alter ego Mavis, who is a long lost UK relative who's an absolute scream, and she does an hour of comedy, and we serve that during the, and she's very cheeky and naughty and comes up with most inappropriate things, but during that show we serve homemade scones and tea from Bone China tea sets and trios and what have you, and lovely cakes and things, and people bring their parents. So we have lots of gay couples who bring their parents or their brothers or their sisters to an event where they get to hang out with the gay community for a while, and it's really good fun, and it's okay, and it's, they get to form relationships. So oh, how long's your son been gay, or how long's your daughter been a lesbian, and so they get to have a conversation that we don't even have to be a part of, and it's really all about them. And so so those sort of shows, and we want to do some workshops as well, that's just new, and we've got some lovely people at Befriend who are going to help facilitate this for us, because I'm not quite sure how to do it, but they assure me that they will help. And we want to do a bit of an on the couch session, where there's so much terminology now that lots of older people are saying, what does it mean to be non-binary, what does that really mean, and what is intersex really, and what's this queer thing? Because when I was young, to be queer was a really bad thing. If someone said you were queer, it meant there was, you know, you were not right in the head. So, but these young people like to be called queer. So what does that really mean? And so we've got a panel of people who are going to come on, and they're going to have a chat about why they choose to be where they are on the spectrum and what that really means, and how we as a community can interact with them in a way that is respectful and in a way that honours their choice. And so they'll be open for questions and discussions and what have you. And so it's a bit of an information session, but it's also, it's a little bit of a socialising information session, and it helps us to move forward. You know, well, I say us because obviously I'm older. It helps us to learn and to know, as the new generations come through, that we address people correctly and that we respect their choices. We now are blessed to be grandparents, and we have, so I had three children when Sarah and I met, and Sarah had Michael, so we now have four children, and from those four children we actually have three grandchildren as well.
Wow.
Yeah, so pretty lucky, pretty lucky, good life. Don't recede into yourself, you know, find friends, like be persistent, you know, tell people, don't bottle it up, don't hurt yourself, you know, seriously. There are a lot of resources. If you're not sure, you know, look on the internet. There's lots of LGBTIQ resources for mental health, for social outings, for even religious groups have got their own subcategories now. So if you're looking for something, you know, within your church or something else, but do not go back inside yourself into a dark place, and find a place and go out with people, be social, and people will help you. They will do everything in their power to help you because they've been there.
Yeah, it's true. Be brave, be yourself. It's easier said than done sometimes, and you know, there will be people that will walk away or make comment, but you know, you just have to be true to yourself, because that's all that really matters. And along the way, you'll find a whole lot of other people that you know, will want to support you, will want to be a part of it. My mum thought I'd be stabbed when I told her, because that's apparently what lesbians do.
Your mum did the same thing. You'll be stabbed.
You'll be stabbed.
It's good to hear how different people have come to where they are in their lives. It doesn't matter what their lives are. It's, you know, it really is quite a rich tapestry that we weave over time. And the older we get, the richer it becomes, and the more we learn.
If you are struggling with your own mental health, please contact Lifeline on 131114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224636. Both services are available 24/7. If you would like to tell your story, share your experiences, or would just like to get in touch, you can email me at queerlifestories@outlook.com. You can also find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just search for Queer Life Stories. This podcast is a no-budget, one-man operation to produce, but you can support this podcast by subscribing to us at Patreon. That's patreon.com/queerlifestories. If you're listening in Tasmania and would like support regarding your sexuality, gender, or intersex status, contact Working It Out on 62311200 or find them on Facebook. QLife provide anonymous and free LGBTI peer support and referral for people across Australia wanting to talk about sexuality, gender identity, relationships, and more. They're available 3 p.m. to midnight every day on 1800 184 527, or you can web chat with them at qlife.org.au. You can hear future episodes of Queer Life Stories on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please follow, subscribe, rate, review, and share. We will be back soon. Thank you for listening. Take care of yourself and each other.